Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Rocket Can. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. And remember, today on CBS, the road to the Final Four reaches its final destination. Houston, Baylor, UCLA, and Gonzaga are the last ones left standing. And now are just one win away from playing in the championship. The NCAA Men's Final Four begins at 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, with the Final Four show leading up to tip-off of Game 1 at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific, only on CBS. 855-212-4CBS. There is an argument that is starting on Twitter here, by the way. Somebody asked me something about The Godfather and the scene where Sonny was shot in the causeway, or on the causeway. And I said, Sonny wasn't the only guy to die that day. The guy in the toll booth had to have died as well. And there's a question of whether or not the guy in the toll booth, when you watch The Godfather, I'm sure James hasn't seen it because nobody sees classic movies at CBS Sports Radio, it seems. But you know when Sonny pulls up to the toll booth, the door closes, the guy ducks. I go, there's not a chance in hell that guy makes it out of their life. There's not a chance in hell that guy doesn't get killed. And there's some people, well, you know, it was a big car. Did you see the ammo? Go back and watch that scene where they shoot Sonny on the causeway. Carlos sets up the whole thing. You talk about one of the worst. But when they shoot Sonny, I will pay it a lot of money if I lose that bet. I will bet anything that the toll booth guy, yeah, probably was the guy who drew the shortest straw to work that toll booth there. I want to see a deleted scene of Francis Ford Coppola of the guys who had to draw straws to see who would work in the toll booth. 855-212-4CBS. I got my mock draft 2.0. I got a big problem, though. I've mixed up what I think they should do and what I think they will do in the top 10. To go over it, we welcome in John Ledyard, Pewter Report. Find him on Twitter at Ledyard. NFL Draft. He is from the Pewter Report. He knows the NFL Draft. John joins us on the show. John, how the hell are you?
I am doing great, man. How are you?
Doing wonderful. I know. Are you guys still celebrating your Super Bowl down there? How's that work?
Oh, yeah. No doubt. I mean, it's every Monday is a victory Monday until the next loss. And who knows when that might be after this offseason. So, yeah, they're living it up. They're celebrating for all they're worth, and as they should. It's been a long time waiting here in Tampa Bay.
Bucks fans just enjoying life right now. So I got a top 10 and a mock draft, but I got a bit of a problem here. I don't know if it should be prediction or opinion. When you come up with a mock draft, how do you do it?
When I do mocks, it's definitely prediction. It's kind of what I'm hearing or what I think based on. I do a lot of research into, like, team history. You know, what's their MO kind of at certain positions? What do they look for? What's their certain GMs? How do they draft? You know, what are their needs, obviously, in their roster? What are the kind of holes that they need to fill? What do they value typically? You know, what players are on the board that kind of fit those needs and those values? And so that's kind of how I do mock drafts. Sometimes that aligns with what I think they should do too, but that's usually not the priority for me doing a mock.
I'm going to run the mock by you, then we're going to go over some other things. You ready? Number one, Jacksonville, they got Trevor Lawrence. Two, the Jets, mm-hmm. they got Zach Wilson. Are you upset with either mm-hmm. one of those?
Nope. I mean, okay. I might take Fields over Wilson, but I think you're right in terms of predicting.
Number three, Everybody's saying Mac Jones. I'm zigging. I'm saying Justin Fields. Your thoughts?
You know, I think there's a lot of connections to the Mac Jones thing. It's crazy to me how many connections there are. The fact that that was the only pro day Shanahan went to. Maybe I'm reading way too much into that, but it seems significant. But I just, at the end of the day, I can't. I mean, to trade what they traded to get up to three for a guy like Mac Jones, I mean, you could find a guy like that in most drafts. It just doesn't seem special enough to me. If they were sitting there and they hadn't moved anything, I would say, okay, maybe I could see Shanahan. But when you get up that high, I think you found somebody special. And to me, that has to be either Fields or Lance in terms of their tools. So I'd zig and say Lance, but, I mean, Fields definitely, I mean, I think he's the better player, so I'd take Fields too.
I have found somebody who agrees with me about Justin Fields, and I don't want to do the rest of the mock draft 2.0. I just want to talk with you about Justin Fields. You know what? The hell with it. That's what we're going to do over here. Because I started off the show. John Ledyard joining us on the show. I started off the show today, and I was incensed. And I wasn't incensed over what – I wasn't incensed with Dan Orlovsky. Dan Orlovsky's doing what people have done for a long time. He got a source that told him that basically Justin Fields was – I mean, when you're talking about a guy's dedication, you're calling him lazy. You're not saying he's lazy, but you're calling a man lazy. And I do think it's unfair. I think that that is the last bastion of what draft people do, sports opinionists like me do, when we can't say anything else negative about a guy or we're proven wrong about all the negativities about a guy. Do you feel the same way about that? Or how much do I take when a source says, hey, you know, there's questions about his dedication? What do I take into account when I hear something like that there, John?
Well, when I hear it about somebody, I always try to see if I can get multiple people on the record about it before I would say anything. And honestly, the vast majority of the time, I'm not reporting or saying anything about it. I use it for my own evaluation purposes, sure. But, like, I mean, the guy reporting it, the guy telling me could be the one that's clueless. You know, it's hard a lot of the time. And when it comes to character, like, you don't want to be the one to speak ill of somebody and you know, like I think Dan ended up doing, honestly. And I like Dan. I mean, I've talked to Dan for years on social, but I think that, yeah, I mean, he's got to be really careful. We have a responsibility in the media field. When you are the only person out there saying something and you haven't heard anybody else say it or report it, you better check with all the other sources that he checked with the next day after the rumor had taken off and run, you know, that told him this is crazy, dude. Like, there's just no way, like, this is not who Justin Fields is. I don't know who you heard this from, but it's absolutely wild. And then you see Bruce Feldman jump in. He asked his sources, and they're like, that's nuts. We have questions about Fields, but that has nothing to do with his work ethic or his character. And so, I mean, then you just look. So you have a responsibility in the media to make sure you get things right, and especially when you're talking about another man's character, you want to make sure you've got it right, and you've got something specific, too, in certain instances. Not saying it's always wrong to report about character concerns for a prospect. We've seen a bunch of people now, I think three or four reputable names, report something about Penei Sewell and how just maturity concerns, they've said it is. I think how to be a pro, like, you know, taking care of your body maybe or practicing, right, or all those kinds of things. I'm not sure. They haven't specified. I wish they would specify, but we've seen a couple people say that now. So smoke fire, maybe. You take it into account. But again, like, if you're somebody like Fields, I mean, Fields has a great reputation. If you're going to go on a show like Pat McAfee's show and say something like that, you better have vetted the all sides of that story before you blurt something out.
At Ledyard NFL Draft on Twitter, he's one of the best. I agree with you about Justin Fields, and I saw Ted Wynn writing about it earlier this week and even last week. A couple other people were talking about him. I find a lot of excuses, but I think they're reasonable excuses. I think they're right excuses for Justin Fields. You know, what would I had said last year, John, about Trevor Lawrence 6 games into his season? Going back to 2019, and by last year, that's what I mean. Not this year in 2020. But 6 games into Trevor Lawrence's second season, what would I had said about him? Well, I got a guy who only got to play 6 regular season games. I got a guy who had his program stopped multiple times, who was getting to know new people. Well, he locks in on Chris Olave. Yeah, if I trust Chris Olave, I'm gonna throw to him because I don't know if I can trust some of the other guys because we don't know when we can practice, when we can't practice. There's going to be certain problems there, and I don't know why those have been used as reasons against Justin Fields, John.
Right. It's ridiculous is really what it is, and it's not fair because here's the thing. It would be you could list those concerns if you were as vocal about the same concerns with Trevor Lawrence or Mac Jones, because I like Trevor Lawrence and I like Mac Jones. I think that both, you know, I love Trevor Lawrence and I think Mac Jones brings a lot of good things to the table too, but those guys operate predominantly in one read, RPO heavy, lots of screen offenses. Those guys are the ones running this ton of predetermined read stuff. It's very, again, the offenses helped them out a lot. Now, did Lawrence over the years there make a ton of plays outside of structure that showed how special he was? Were there games in which they opened things up when they needed to, especially on the big stage, and he was absolutely brilliant? Absolutely. There's no question. Both those guys showed the ability to some extent. Lawrence, obviously, far more than Jones, to do special things at the quarterback position. I'm not saying it to knock those guys so much as it's amazing that we've zeroed in on the fact that Ohio State could scheme open a primary receiver. And that's a knock on Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones, who had this happen literally twice as much as Justin Fields did in their offenses. We don't hear a peep about it. That, to me, is the problem. The problem isn't, I have questions about Ohio State's offense converting to the NFL. That we see that every year with college quarterbacks. We should cover that part of it. I mean, not saying we should rule guys out because of it, but we should think about it. We should analyze it. We should talk to people like Ted, who you mentioned, who know a lot about those kinds of things. What's the conversion like here? What's this transition going to be like going to the NFL? But we can't use it to knock one guy and then say these other guys, we don't see it with. Like, these guys are doing it. I mean, the stats are out there. They're doing it twice as much as Fields ever was in college, maybe more, and it's not being used against them too. So we just need to be fair and balanced about how we're going about it. If people have questions about Fields, okay, let's talk about it. I'm always open to talk about a prospect, but let's make sure we're being fair about the way we go about it.
So, John Ledyard joining us on the show. What is it about Mac Jones that has all these general managers frothing all of a sudden now?
I think it's the fact that, a one-year starter, to be able to throw with anticipation like he does and he just seems like he has great awareness, great field vision. I know people use that term. It's like, what is that scouty-sounding term? I think to me it just means, and this was said really well by Nate Tyson and Robert Mays on the Athletic NFL podcast, but they were saying, I think it was Robert who was saying, he just kind of knows where the bodies are, like where he can throw a ball ahead of time before a guy gets out of his break, and he knows, like, he gets where the coverage is going to be. And so he just has kind of a great feel as a passer, which is pretty exciting, I think. Now, that offense, there's a lot of easy deliveries. Guys are open a lot, so there's a lot of simple stuff. But I think he handled things really well from a mental standpoint. He just doesn't make many mistakes. He's clean, and if your scheme is great, I think he can operate it pretty cleanly. The problem is that almost all the time, there comes a point where you need your quarterback to be special in the NFL, especially you getting, could Mac Jones go to San Francisco and they could make the playoffs this year with him as a starter? Yeah, I think that's possible. What's the ceiling ever going to be for Mac Jones? How many other pieces around him have to be just about perfect, for him to win a Super Bowl, for him to get you where you need to go? Because is he ever going to be the guy that puts the team on his back in a key moment to do that? I mean, he never had to do that at Alabama, especially in a year like this one. I mean, even the SEC was a shell of itself this year with all these teams barely playing. I mean, they got even in the college football playoff, and there was nobody was even close to Alabama's level across the entire country. Ohio State, they're going to play Ohio State. They always have a great secondary. Not this year, man. Those guys were terrible this year. And so it was just, there was no resistance all year for Mac Jones. There was just none. And so that's really the question mark they have with him. Is what's going to happen in the NFL when there's resistance? Will he be able to create and be special, or will he just be a guy that basically, if the rest of the team around him is perfect, you give yourself a chance? That's rarely going to happen in the NFL if that's the case, and certainly probably right now in San Francisco, at least, I would say that's not the case. So you would need, to me, if you're moving up to three, you need to do it for somebody that offers a little bit more of something special.
That's what terrifies me here, John, because I think that four quarterbacks could go with the first four picks. I got Denver trading back to Atlanta at 9. And I could see it Lawrence, Wilson, Fields, Lance, and the last three in any order you really want.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the one, and then that fifth quarterback, I'm sorry, but I would say that the fifth quarterback, like Mac Jones, that's the one I fear for the most, because they can't all be superstars in this draft, these top five guys here, John.
Right, they can't be. You're right. It's not going to happen, even if we think, right now on paper, I really do think it's one of the best quarterback classes I've ever seen. I mean, it's really just a really good group. Usually you have some type of question or limitation, and we've seen, Orlovsky's comment aside the other day, we've seen all five of these guys check out in the character department and the work ethic department. We've seen all five of them check out in the tools and physical traits, or at least the top four guys, not including Mac. But physical tools, I mean, all the top four guys have great physical tools, great arms. They can throw off platform. They can get outside the pocket. They can run, all of them. I mean, usually you're in the conversation. Even last year, everybody knew Joe Burrow was the top guy. But, what's the ceiling for an arm like Joe Burrow's? And that was kind of the question mark. Those are kind of the things that you normally debate. This year, we don't even have that. So it's fun from that perspective because you see this sky-high ceiling for everybody. But yeah, if you're Denver and Carolina right now, you're looking at the group. You're like, man, I don't want to get stuck with the fifth guy. But is Atlanta going to trade with Carolina, help them find their franchise quarterback? I don't know. Is Atlanta going to? I know Matt Ryan's contract's big, but they can get out of it next year. They can. You have to talk to some cap experts to get the details why, but I just got the yes, it's possible for them. They could save some money, I think, actually getting out of his contract next year, about $10 million. So that's on the table for them if they wanted to do that. New head coach, new GM. It might be like, okay, we got a real opportunity drafting the top five to take our quarterback for the future. That's hard to pass up if you're Atlanta. I would pull that trigger in a heartbeat. If Justin Fields is there for Atlanta, I mean, that's a no-brainer to me. To be the franchise guy moving forward, I think that would be the direction they got to go in.
Hard for me to disagree with you at all there, John. John Ludd, you're joining us on the show, Peter Report. Will Jimmy Garoppolo be a San Francisco 49er week one, and then should he be a San Francisco 49er week one?
I think yes and yes. No, it depends who they draft. I'll see who they draft. To see, if it's Fields, then I become way more interested in trading because I think Fields is – I think he can go. Mac could probably go, but again, it's for San Francisco, it's like, well, if you basically just drafted another Jimmy Garoppolo. That's why it doesn't make sense to me. But I just don't – why would you even – I don't understand. But I think, Jimmy Garoppolo, I think their biggest concern is can he stay healthy. Now, after the season, I don't think he'll be there. And so – but he has the no-trade clause. That makes it tricky for this season. How do they work around that? The chance of them finding a fit are pretty slim, I think. And then there's the other element of it. They said they want a first-round pick for him. Everybody's acting like they changed their minds. I think they were serious. We're not going to trade Jimmy. We're going to next year as our quarterback. Jimmy is our quarterback. And then they're like, if you offer us a first-round pick, we'll trade him. Because at that point, obviously, okay, that makes sense. But they're probably not going to get offered a first-round pick. I don't think even Chicago is that desperate right now. And so, in that case, I would say that they probably end up hanging on to him, letting him start the season. Maybe they trade him before the deadline if the rookie's coming along, going great. But I think, having him there week one makes sense to me.
I got another one, and then I want to express some fake outrage with you. I want Kyle Pitts to go to Cincinnati. I love him. I think he's so great. I think he's got a world of talent on him, but I know that they need an offensive line because basically they have nothing there. Do you have to pick an offensive lineman if you're Cincinnati, knowing that, boy, Kyle Pitts, I think he's LeBron James if LeBron decided to play basketball. He's that athletic.
I am 100% with you on the Kyle Pitts thing. I'm 100% with you on the offensive weapon thing. This is actually a huge – this is going to be the big debate. Outside of San Francisco and who they take, this is going to be the big debate, I think. What should Cincinnati do? I mean, already my colleagues and I in a group DM, we have been going back and forth on this one. There are people, battle lines are drawn, and I am very much on the offensive weapon side of things, whether that's Pitts or Chase. To me, the best way to approach offensive line is to build it as a unit, not to find one star. Now, if the best player on the board was Penei Sewell, absolutely you take Penei Sewell. But to me, he's not. I think his tape is good. I think he will be a good starter in the NFL. I don't think Penei Sewell is Walter Jones. And even if he was, it behooves you way more to spend your resources on veterans or on mid-round picks in the offensive line, I think, to be able to build a unit that's competent, especially in that offense. Joe Burrow is going to play that position at a high level. You don't need – he's not going to be Russell Wilson back there running around taking forever, or even a quarterback with no – like a Jameis Winston with no pocket presence. He's not going to be that guy. So you have to understand, if you can get him weapons, especially a guy that, by the way, had the greatest quarterback wide receiver season in college football history in Ja'Marr Chase, if you can get him that guy and he falls in your lap and you pass on that connection for an offensive I just don't – to me, the value in having playmakers, and I think T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd are good, solid players – but they are not your number one guy. They are not the guys you want to run your offense through. They are not game-changer type of weapons. I think two game-changer type weapons could very well be on the board for Cincinnati. To me, you got to take the creators and then the preventer. And Penei Sewell, it's a good pick if you get the opportunity to move down and you really love Sewell. I understand it. You add more picks. But this draft, there's a couple really good playmakers. If you come away with one of those guys and then in the second round you come away with Brady Christensen from BYU or Liam Eichenberg from Notre Dame or somebody like that, I think you feel a lot better than if you came away with Sewell and, one of these slot receivers. I mean, there's 100 slot receivers in this draft. They already have a slot in Tyler Boyd. They need a guy who can play outside, who can replace A.J. Green, be that type of playmaker. To me, either that's Pitts, which, I mean, Pitts could be that versatile guy, or Chase. I think you have to go one of those two at five.
John, I want people to lighten up on Ryan Pace, but for a very sad reason. I know he messed up. You know he messed up. He knows it. We all know it. We all know he's probably going to get fired soon. Do people want him to step down like he's Richard Nixon? Like, he's not going to quit. He's got to try to do something there. And, yeah, Andy Dalton is Andy Dalton. But, hey, he tried. He swung. He missed. We all know it. I don't know why we got to beat up on Ryan Pace every time he speaks to the media.
Yeah, I mean, the Russell Wilson thing is hard to blame him for. If Russell Wilson was honestly available, it would have been a done deal. Like, he didn't – it's not like he was his fault. Yeah, did he do a lot of other things to get him to this spot? I mean, sure. You could say that. I mean, certainly the trade for Nick Foles is pretty ill-advised looking back at it. You know what I mean? I get it. He's trying to compete and trying to capture some of that magic Foles found. But you just – I think it's really important in team building to realize when you got to kind of be like, all right, we got to start over with some things here. And the Bears were really in that spot. They didn't do it. They went, what, 8-8 or something like that, and then now look where they're drafting and look at the position they're in. And they could have said, all right, we got to restart some things. You know, we're going to roll with whoever at quarterback, you know, and we're going to not be very good this year, probably not call it tanking, you know, try to compete. But I mean, like, for example, like the Texans are like, they just signed 1 million people to 1 year deals that aren't very good. And so like those guys are going to play their tails off and they're going to keep the culture going because that's them playing for their next paycheck and their next job. But, you know, they're not going to be very good this year. And so I think there's some value in recognizing that as a GM and saying, all right, realistically, we are not built to compete at the level we need to really be a challenger in the NFC this year. So we need to kind of do, instead of doing our, we're going to stopgap things. Like, at some point, that isn't the way to go anymore, and it's actually going to set you back for a longer period of time. And I know Bears fans are kind of like shaking their fists right now because it's like, oh, we could have been in the top 10 of this draft and had a shot with a little trade-up even at one of these guys. Who you'll see, like you said, they won't all be franchise changers, but you know, if three of them are, it's going to be tough on Bears fans, I think.
Follow this man on Twitter, Ledyard NFL Draft. John Ledyard joining us on the show. John, thank you very much, buddy. You take care.
Absolutely, Ken. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
John Ledyard, Pewter Report, joining us on the show. I got a thought on Ryan Pace. I got a couple of calls. We'll get to you guys. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, and some things are more important than money. I have proof after this week. It's Ken Carmen, live on CBS Sports Radio. Heard a lot of outrage earlier this week. Just thought it was fake. The stuff about Ryan Pace. I just brought it up to John Ledyard, Pewter Report. You can hear that interview in its entirety, CBSSportsRadio.com. How can Ryan Pace tell us that Andy he knows he's getting fired, guys? Do you want him to do Richard Nixon? Do you want him to go out there and tell him that he's going to resign the office effective at noon tomorrow? No. You're not going to do it. Maybe Andy Dalton is able to win football games with a decent running game and with a good defense. Probably not. Ryan Pace will probably get fired, and probably Matt Nagy will probably get fired. Matt Nagy's going to take over offensive play calls. Going to redo it again. Tried to give it to an OC last year. Probably didn't work out. But Ryan Pace knows he's getting fired. He took his shot and he missed. We'll find out later this year whether or not, well, we'll find out probably over the next couple of years about San Francisco. You'll take your shot at your quarterback. Sometimes you hit. Sometimes you're John Dorsey and Veach with the Kansas City Chiefs, and you trade up and you take Patrick Mahomes and you get the quarterback of the generation. And sometimes you're Ryan Pace and you trade up for Mitch Trubisky and it doesn't go well for you. And then you try to get Nick Foles, and that doesn't go well for you. And then you try the Hail Mary of Hail Marys, and you try to get Russell Wilson. Which, by the way, don't tell me his contempt didn't work. They trade for Gabe Jackson, sign Gabe Jackson, sign their running back. Nice big deal for Tyler Lockett. They maybe still do all that stuff, but boy, they did a lot to satiate Russell Wilson here over the last year, have they not now? Or I would say over the last couple of months now. 855-212-4CBS. It's a sad reason. I don't need to sit there and rip on Ryan Pace every single day that he goes and talks to the media. He knows he's getting let go. He's still got to try to win something. He messed up. We all make mistakes. He made a big one. He'll get fired. Bears fans will probably have a nice pick coming up. They'll probably have a pick of coaches coming up, and they'll have fun with it. And Bears fans will have something to look forward to. Not this year, but eventually in the future, they'll have something to look forward to. It'll be nice. Also got a tweet from Philip, and this is going to be something we'll make a bigger deal about as time goes on. I love Kyle Pitts. A lot of people love Ja'Marr Chase. He's obviously really, really good too. Philip says, Burrow blew out his knee. Line is terrible. How many franchises regret not protecting their quarterback? Take the tackle. I got to have a name. I can't just say a position. Their line sucks. Philip's right. Their line's terrible. We all knew that. I didn't think, I was afraid that Joe Burrow would take such a pounding that something bad would happen. Sadly, I was right, but I still think that the knee injury is still kind of a freak occurrence. Patrick Mahomes had one of the best offensive lines in football in 2019, missed time, took a hit, got an injury with the football, ran himself into trouble there. Still missed time. Had one of the best offensive lines in football. Sometimes a freak occurrence happens. Now, Joe Burrow was planted many, many times before that, and it's still a very big feel, a very big worry for the Cincinnati Bengals. But I got guys who – Ja'Marr Chase, I think, is good. I think Kyle Pitts can change the tight end position again, can take what Rob Gronkowski started and take it to another level. And if I'm just taking a guy because he takes a position, if I don't feel passionate about – Penei Sewell or maybe Rashawn Slater at that number five spot, I'm just going to make a bad situation worse. There's a lot more offensive linemen than there used to be who can't play week one. There are guys who can do it, but it's becoming fewer and far between. We've had problems with quarterbacks. We're having problems with offensive line, and they've been the same problems. Now we'll see whether or not the change for offensive lines will happen because the offenses are changing in the NFL for quarterbacks, and they're playing earlier. But I can't just take a position while it's one of the most important positions on the field. If I feel the guy is not going to be a right fit, and I'm going to have to ask that player to play very early and protect my biggest asset, if I don't feel he's up for the task, I'm making an even worse decision out of a bad situation. And I don't think any team can do that. But ultimately, I think Phillip's right. I think they'll take the tackle and they'll move on. 855-212-4CBS. Things that are more important than money. I promise I'll get to that. I'll get to the calls. And the Nets are winning the finals this year. I'm calling it. Because they damn well better for KD's sake. It's Ken Carman on CBS Sports Radio right now. It's the latest sports update with Erica Herskowitz. I'm a big LeBron fan, but this is hilarious. So I saw the Space Jam 2 trailer come out. I talked about it a little bit earlier with Pierno. I'm going to get the phones here in a second. Are you into movies there, Bocce Ball?
Yes, very much.
Are you going to watch Space Jam 2?
I watched the trailer. I was not too thrilled by it. It looks a little corny, a little...
Well, it's for kids,
I know,
Bocce
I mean, but is it, though?
Yeah, it's for kids. It's animation. It's for children. Was the Michael Jordan movie, was the Michael Jordan Space Jam for kids? Yeah, it was for kids. It wasn't for my parents.
I get Why? The first one being for kids, totally. But this one I feel like has to cater to that nostalgia factor as well.
Of what?
Of Space Jam 1.
Why does it have to cater to the parents? Does everything have to cater to nostalgia for 90s children?
I don't know if it has to, but I think it would be wise.
I'm sure there will be some references in the movie. This is just a trailer. And maybe you're right about it. There's always some adult stuff in the movie. Either way, I'm not even getting to what I wanted to get to. I watched the trailer. I didn't realize. LeBron is making his team to beat, I guess, Don Cheadle's team to get his son back. And it's Superman, Gandalf, King Kong, Iron Giant are the first four. And people are going, you know, Jordan only needed to beat the Monstars with Bill Murray. I went, damn. Even in the movie, we're doing it. I love it. 855-212-4CBS. I'm like, this is, you know what? That's a hell of a point. Michael Jordan only needed Bill Murray to beat beat the Monstars. Let me get to Joe in Oregon first. Joe, you're first up on CBS Sports Radio. Go ahead.
I guess I never thought about that point. And how good was Bill Murray in the first Space Jam? Am I right?
He was great, but I still wasn't a great basketball player. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's fine. I wanted to talk about the Pac-12's run in both tournaments. I think the point made that Arizona...
Pac-12 apologist Joe in Oregon. wants to talk. Wait, we got Bill Walton on the show now, Joe.
Oh,
they have
you
a
know
good
I
run.
Back to pack. I got
Arizona Stanford will be a great women's final. They've actually, I tell you what, for as bad as that, as ugly as this all started with the NCAA and everything, it has been an incredible women's tournament. It really has been.
But even in the men's tournament, with three Pac-12 teams making it to the Elite Eight, I said one Pac-12 team has to make it to the Final Four, or the run, in my opinion, is all for naught. Because even when Oregon State lost to Houston, the narrative of, oh, yeah, you know, it was just too much for Oregon State to overcome. And for me, it's like they tied the game. It was anyone's game with 2.5 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just the clock ran out for Oregon State, unfortunately. And I don't think anybody was expecting USC to beat Gonzaga.
Nope.
I don't expect UCLA to beat Gonzaga. I don't know Gonzaga was going to win the whole thing.
Well, the best thing for the Pac-12 that happened, Joe, and I think, do you think Gonzaga is going to win the whole thing, by the way? You do?
I think they will.
Yeah.
I do.
The best thing that happened for the Pac-12 is that, you know, Mick Cronin, the guy's a talented basketball coach, and I think that he's got the stuff to keep them up there for a while. You know, the Pac-12 has not been the Pac-12. And I know this is a Francesa-style statement here. The Pac-12 has not been the Pac-12 if UCLA is not what they're supposed to be. And UCLA
right. and
hasn't
I agree
been.
With that.
And there's been and I've been just as gobsmacked as anybody else. You know, we had John Fanta on. It's like, finally, like you're going and being UCLA again. Like, it should not be hard to recruit college-age kids to play in Los Angeles, California. And for whatever reason, they've had their problems there for the last decade plus, you know, a couple of good years as well. But I think Mick Cronin's got the stuff that he can keep that going for a while.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But it's overall been a great tournament. I am pulling for Arizona just because I think it's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gonzaga's going to win it all. And the run by my Oregon State Beavers is one for the ages, that's for sure.
It really was. And baseball season is here, and I know you'll love that even more, my friend. Let me get to Tim in Charlotte. You're next up on CBS Sports Radio. Go ahead, Tim.
My electrocution brother. Man, when you told that story of the digital clock, I almost wrapped my car around a tree.
Well, I'm glad you didn't.
My dad and I were working on a TV, and it had the old tube TVs. You might not remember that. I'm a couple hundred years older than you.
I used to have to carry those things up steps. I know. Oh, yeah.
But my dad kept saying, whatever you do, don't touch that black box with anything metal. And it was basically a small car battery.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was sitting there like your dad was smoking, but he was drinking a little bit of scotch, and he just stared at me. And I walked over there with a screwdriver, and I touched the top part of that battery, and that thing shot me back 10 feet, and he just stared at me and said, so, what'd that feel like? I said, that was painful. And my hand was in a hook for like 3 days. It would not straighten out. And he eventually said, it will be fine eventually. And you emphasize something. We learn by lessons sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
We learn by lessons that we don't know are coming. And you're exactly right. I got three kids, and they all think they hung the moon. And I said, you guys are going to run down roads that you should not run down. And I said, trust me, I've been down some bad ones. But I said, you got to understand, sometimes adults don't want you to get hurt, and they give you warning signs. God gives you warning signs, but sometimes you take your own path, and it messes you up. And I feel bad for a lot of these kids that are 18, 19, like you said, and I think they're trying to – they think they hung the moon. And,
yeah,
and someday somebody's going to knock them back.
But some – but and I'm hoping – and, Tim, I thank you very much for the story and the call, my friend, and for listening. Is this goes back to, you know, when I brought up about 1,100 kids or 1,100 college players in the transfer portal right now. That's a lot. That's a lot. I'm just not going to sit there and call them quitters. I think that that's silly, and I don't think that that fixes anything. And I told the story about my dad watched me goof around with an outlet before, and I shocked myself, and I did that weird silent cry thing where I'm shocked at first, and I'm going, and then I started crying. And my dad just looked down and blew the smoke out of his mouth and said, you're not going to do that again, are you? And there, I've learned a lesson through doing, and I've learned lessons watching other people do stupid stuff and say, no, I shouldn't do that. That's a stupid thing, and bad things can happen. And I do hope that, yeah, other kids will learn that the transfer portal may not be the best way for them. But we've had generations of people with misinformation, with maybe flat-out lies, that have hurt the prospects of other young players around college basketball, around college sports. This is a bottleneck, but I still think it's a bottleneck. I read one of those warning articles during one of the breaks. So it could be 2,400 next year, then 3,300 next year. It's chaos, dogs and cats living with each other. No, it'll eventually work itself out. There's things that we have to course correct. Eventually, there will be people who learn because there will be coaches who have to be asked more to maybe stay around or do more, you know, for the kids' sake, for the players' sake. You know, that's what they're supposed to be there for. You can make money. You can be rich. John Thompson's case, you know, he always said the players want to win. He wants what's best for the players, but he wants to be rich too. You can do that. But you have to hold yourself accountable. And then there will be 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds who you just can't reach. And they'll have to serve as cautionary tales. It'll be okay. I don't need to call them quitters. I don't need to say that this is wrong with the youth of America, because I was once one of the youths of America, and I made stupid decisions too. Just like you did, just like my kids will. Got to learn from them, or learn from other people's examples too. Steve in Virginia. I was going to do all this other stuff. I got these calls. Steve, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I love the show, man.
Thank you very much. Go ahead. What do you got on your mind?
Yeah. Hey, I was talking about Justin Fields. I'm a big-time Georgia Bulldog fan, and I have been upset with them ever since they let Justin Fields get away. On Dog Nation, I told them that once Fields left, he was going to win the Heisman Trophy. Even though he didn't, he came close. But Fields is going to be a very good professional player, and I'm pretty sure Atlanta will take him simply because he's a Georgia boy.
I think it'd be a great story. I love him. I love him, Steve. And I'm not
so
prone, even though I know what state I broadcast from. I went to Akron. I'm not prone to love every Ohio State player. I think he's great. And I've been very – and, Steve, I thank you for the call. I'm just up on time here. I've been very defensive over him over the last couple of months, ever since the beginning of, well, he does this, well, he doesn't do that, well. And then the character assassination started this week, and I say you got to be careful with that type of thing. You know, these are very public job interviews. And if someone calls me and asks me for a reference, there might be somebody who put me down as a reference that I might not know them that well, and I may be uncomfortable doing it, but I've always been told it's poor form to give a bad reference. I don't know that person. I'm maybe not very comfortable with giving them a reference. Perhaps you should call somebody else. That's fair. It's a fair thing to do. Now, the person who's on the other line, they could always take it as, well, if he didn't say anything. I might not know the person that well. And in this case, when it comes to Justin Fields, there might be people who don't know him that well that, I don't know, just don't like Justin Fields, and so they can't knock down the anticipatory throws. That one's been put to bed. They can't knock down the Chris Olave thing. They can't knock down playing with great talent, because you got Mac Jones who shot up the leaderboard, and Mac Jones plays with great talent. Well, then I guess I'm just going to have to resort to calling him lazy. There's rumors of calling somebody lazy. That's a very strong thing. And in our world, and I'm going to assume in Steve's world, and I'm going to assume in all the other callers' world, if you call someone lazy, you better do it to their face, because that's a personal affront that person can take seriously. And I think there's probably a situation every day in America where somebody calls somebody else lazy and it ends with somebody holding their face because they got socked. I'd imagine that. It's a very strong personal offense to a lot of people to call them lazy. So I feel I'm very defensive over Justin Fields. I think he's done I think he's had a great body of work. I think if you line him up next to other quarterbacks in recent history, in current draft talk, I think that if you didn't know who they were, where they went, and you just put him next to these guys, I think you're looking at number one. Now, Trevor Lawrence, we've talked about him like crazy. He's probably number one. Are we sure he's a sure thing? I don't know. Can't say that for sure. I don't think any of this is. But I don't like some of the conversation around Justin Fields. When I watch Justin Fields at Ohio State, and I think, man, that's a guy with the type of offense that Kyle Shanahan can run, with his athleticism, with his arm, can do a multitude of things for the San Francisco 49ers. And if they tape Mac Jones, they tape Mac Jones, and maybe it'll work out for Mac Jones. He's a sneaky athletic guy, that Mac Jones is. I hate saying it, but, you know, 33-inch vertical for, what, 740? That's not bad. Not bad at all. I was surprised. Can he throw the ball? Yeah. Is he in a one-read spread-out offense? Yeah. Same thing with Justin Fields. I don't want to take away from him just because he goes to a good school, just like what Justin Fields did. I don't know why we're taking away from one where we're shooting the other one up the leaderboard. Don't want to do that. Don't want to go after Mac Jones either. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing shakes out. It's going to be interesting. And that's not even a take. It's just the truth. Because I think that Justin Fields has got the stuff physically to be a top-end NFL quarterback. And I think he'll start off hot. It's just whether or not he'll be able to answer to the answering that defenses do. Defenses make adjustments. You'll have to adjust to adjustments. Every quarterback gets figured out. Every single one. It's just they're able to adjust to those adjustments there. And they'll have to do it. By the way, got like 60 seconds to say this. I'm picking the Nets to win the finals because they have to. I've had Michael Rappaport on my show. I never let Michael Rappaport work me into that big of a shoot. KD has gone nuts and needs to get that albatross off of him and win a title so he can have some sanity and some peace again. Also, I want to thank all you guys because I didn't have to talk about that clown Hugh Jackson today. Big thanks to Anthony Pirno, Belletti, Herskowitz, Boccioni, the law offices of them. I'm Ken Carmen. Ponies next. Have a great Easter, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.